Up here, we are continuing our series on conflict, conflicted, or conflict education. Sometimes in conflict, maybe you've been in that situation where you're in an argument and eventually you get to the place where you're not even sure how you got to where you got to in that argument. Here is a hypothetical situation that may or may not have happened between Michelle and I, though it is somewhat based on a true story. I was trying to be a great husband, working from home on a Friday, so I had the flexibility to say, you know what? I'm going to clean up the whole house for my wife. I'm going to vacuum. I am going to strip the bed of all the sheets and put clean sheets on the bed for her. I'm going to do all the laundry as my work breaks, even fold all of her clothes and hang all of them up on the hangers. She can go through 14 socks in a week. It's incredible, but I will fold all of them for her. Okay? I like the refrigerator has dog drool on it. I'm cleaning that up. She's supposed to come home at 5:30, so I even make a meal. I know it's been a long week, so I make a meal for her to come home to. And really, at the end of the day, what I'm looking for is for her to say, wow, Ryan, you are an incredible husband. Let's just be real honest. There's a little bit of selfishness going on. She, on the other hand, went into work at 4:30 in the morning, worked a very full day at 4 p.m. Boss calls her in and says, hey, we've got to talk about some stuff for my last meeting. She's in a meeting till 5:30 p.m. on a Friday, doesn't get out. She's in Des Moines at 5:30, gets home an hour after my dinner has been made. Now the dinner's cold. She walks in. She's frazzled. The first thing she says when she looks at what I made, why didn't you make the chicken that I put in the refrigerator and told you you needed to make because it's getting old? It's been in the fridge for 4 days. How do you think I felt in that moment? Michelle, look around at all the house. You see how clean it is. I'm expecting a huge kiss. I'm expecting confetti cannons to go off. I get, oh, thanks. So I realize that's not what I was looking for. So I tell her that. I expected a little more appreciation. So she tells me a thing or two. And back and forth it goes. At a certain point, you know, as a wise husband, I got to the place where you always do this. Or you never pick up your clothes from the floor. And I'm always the one who has to do that for you. And you don't even appreciate it. And the fight can go and it can spiral and it can leave you in other directions. And hours later, I can find myself saying, you have no soul. To which she looks at me and says, you can't even spell soul. Is it S-O-L-E or S-O-U-L? You've been there before, right? Probably not in this fight. I've never actually been in this fight, but it was fun writing this down. But you've been in that place where you're in an argument with somebody and you start thinking, how did we even get here? Where did this whole thing begin? What was the root of why we're even fighting in the first place? If you felt that way, you're not alone. Sometimes our fights get very messy. You know you're mad, and you know the other person's really angry, and you can't seem to find common ground. Now, last week, we talked about how to move forward when that happens. When you're like, okay, we are in the middle of a disagreement or an argument. How are we going to move forward? And we learned how the common responses of just fighting and just digging in or running away through flight or freezing and just building barriers around your life, those don't really work because they don't deal with the conflict. And God gave us an alternative way, and that is forgiveness. But today what we're going to talk about is not to do when the conflict has already erupted, but what is something we can do to prevent the conflict from escalating in the first place. And so this week we're going to talk about preventing conflict through the secret weapon that God gives us by choosing love. Choosing to love in the middle of conflict looks differently depending on the situation. I'll be honest, and we'll talk about that later. But you have to decipher what's going on in the middle of this conflict. And it begins by recognizing, why are we where we are? Where did this conflict begin? You have to search for the source of the conflict. That's what James, the brother of Jesus, is writing about. In our passage we're going to look at today in James chapter 4, if you want to turn there in your Bibles now. So James is Jesus' brother, and he writes a letter to a bunch of different churches, okay? We're not totally sure which churches he writes this letter to, but it's widely spread around. And in his letter, he talks about how there's all this conflict and strife inside the churches. But he doesn't actually give us the specifics of what was going on the way that Paul often did in his letters. What that allows us to do, though, is to take these principles and see them as very universal. They apply to many of our lives and many of our arguments. So today we are going to jump in James chapter 4, verse 1. He leads off with, "What is causing the quarrels and the fights among you?" Essentially, the first sentence is, why is this going on? What's the source of the struggle? But really, we find out it's a rhetorical question because he's got the answer. Don't they come from the evil desires at war within you? Essentially, James is saying what we all know is true. The root of most of our fights is sin. It's our evil desires. Often, I think it's our selfish desires, what we want for ourselves. It's evil, it's sin-filled, it's not something the other person can do for us. There's a root of wrongdoing inside me or you that is leading to this conflict. Not all the time. Sometimes it's a miscommunication, but often sin and evil desires are at the root of the conflict. That's what he's saying in verse 1 there. There's a popular phrase, hurt people hurt people. And what that means is basically those who have dealt with a lot of junk in their lives tend to be people who allow that junk to fling far and wide to anybody in their orbit. I think of the analogy often of an argument or a fight is we are as individuals covered in mud. Like sin is represented by mud. And sometimes when things aren't going well, we grab some of the mud off of ourselves and we fling it at somebody else. Okay? And so it's just people who have been sinned against more, who are messier in their own lives, tend to make more mess in their relationships because there's just a lot more mud to fling around at different people. There's a lot more sin and evil desires in some people's hearts because of how they've been treated and abused, and they just let it out towards everybody else around them. So the fights and the quarrels are these evil desires coming out and being thrown in the face of people who are nearby. In verse 2, he continues, "You want what you don't have, so you scheme and kill to get it. You're jealous of what others have, but you can't get it. So you fight and wage war to take it away from them." Essentially, when your needs, wants, or expectations aren't met how you want, you're willing to go to extremes to get it. Notice the hyperbole he uses here. He says, you're killing and you're waging war with one another. Now, it is unlikely that there were people within the churches that James was talking about who were actually murdering one another. If that were the case, we'd probably have some information about that in church history or in other books of the Bible. I think what he's talking about, though, is you get to a place where you're so angry, you are just blowing up at the other person. It feels as though you've gone to war with them. And I'm sure all of you know people who are like that. That when conflict hits, it's not just an argument or a disagreement, but it feels like you have gone to all-out war against that person because they show up guns a-blazing, ready to kill. Any of you know that person? Okay, don't raise your hand. Good. Are you sitting next to that person? Don't raise your hand. Right? There are just some people who things escalate really, really fast. And James is saying the reason that that happens is often you have these desires that aren't being met. You have these hopes and these dreams, and you're angry that I want this, but I can't have this. And so you just explode. And now here's where James makes a surprising turn. The back half of verse 2, he says, you don't have what you want because you don't ask God for it. And even when you ask, you don't get it because your motives are all wrong. You want only what will give you pleasure. Did you catch that? Rather than fighting for what you want, you could be asking God to meet your needs and letting him provide. Granted, James warns that often when people ask God for something, it's their selfish desires they're asking for, and they're saying, I really want this thing for my pleasure and my good, and it's not in alignment with what God actually wants for their lives. This verse really kind of challenged my thinking. At first, I thought, wait, what does, how does asking God have to do at all with my marital spat with Michelle? Everything, actually. Because when you dig deeper into the source, what was the cause of the fight? I wanted applause. I wanted somebody to say, wow, Ryan, thank you for everything you did. And my wife had had a day where that wasn't what she was able to give. And let's be honest, all of us sometimes look for other people to provide things for us that they're not equipped to provide all the time. But we have a God who is, who's faithful. When I need acceptance, I have a relationship with God. He accepts me. He chooses me. He loves me. He adopts me into his family. He forgives me and offers me an eternal home. If my acceptance has to be completely rooted on what my wife thinks or what you as a church think of me, guess what? I am going to get angry often when people let me down. In the same way, when you're in disagreements with people, maybe you've got a coworker who's just mean, just gruff, mean-spirited, puts you down at times, and you want it to stop. You simply want respect and to be treated fairly. And so when they get snarky with you, you one day finally decide to get snarky back, thinking that's going to fix it. It's not. Instead, God's saying, you don't have the respect you want because you didn't come to me and pray and say, God, I got a bad situation with this coworker. They're not respecting me. I'm asking God, help this relationship. Or God, help me endure this difficult coworker. But instead, you fight for yourself to try to get what you want is the respect of that person, and it blows up in your face. Now, I'm not saying pray for that coworker to get fired, right? God, make this person never be at work again. Because that falls into the bottom half of that verse, is these motives that are all wrong. We're not supposed to do that either. We should want what's best for others, and we want what God wants for us. And God's saying, if you want that, stop fighting and quarreling and letting your sinfulness and your selfishness try to grasp for everything you need. Come to me, pray, and ask, and I'll provide everything you need. So often our fights are because somebody has status and we want status. Somebody got an award and we want the award. Somebody got the money or won the prize or whatever it is. There's things that people got that I want for myself, or ways that people are treated and I want them to treat me better. And we have all these conflicts and God is saying, you know what? You're not going to solve these on your own. Bring these issues to me. I want to provide. Throughout this passage, James is really just saying, sin and selfishness are the source of most conflicts. When we understand that, we can start to tease out what's going on when we have these big problems. When these conflicts start brewing, we see these fights coming. Like, you can see a fight coming typically from a little ways before you're really in the heart of the storm. And there's a moment there where we can say, okay, let's evaluate. What is the sin? What is the selfishness? What is going on here? Now, I'm not saying that you are always at fault for every fight you end up in, okay? Sometimes it is entirely on the other person. Sometimes they're just rough or they're going through some really hard stuff at home and they're flinging mud on everybody else and you just happen to be in their wake. But you don't know if you might be part of the problem if you don't examine yourself first. It reminds me of Jesus' teaching in his Sermon on the Mount in Matthew chapter 7, when Jesus says these words, "And why worry about a speck in your friend's eye when you have a log in your own? Hypocrite, first get rid of the log in your own eye, then you will see well enough to deal with the speck in your friend's eye." It is not fair to blame somebody else for being the root of the whole problem without first examining how you might be adding to the conflict, how you might be making the fight worse. So many people, when you ask them, like, "Hey, what's going on at work? You're so upset." And they're like, "It's all so-and-so's fault." If you're saying it's all so-and-so's fault, you probably have not taken the time to look in the mirror and adequately evaluate what you are adding to that conflict. And if you're not addressing your own sins, good luck trying to tell that person how they're making a mess of your life, because they're looking at you going, "You are just as sinful and selfish as I am." This is why it is so essential for you to search for the source of conflict and be willing to concede that the problem might, at least in part, be with you. I know the great majority of the times I have been in real lasting conflict with somebody where it wasn't just like a one-off bad day situation, but like I've got a real rub with somebody. Pretty much every single time when I looked at myself, I was able to recognize, yeah, I'm contributing to making this worse, right? I'm not the only one, I hope. Give me some head nods. You understand. There are times you've been in that and you're like, yeah, I'm not totally without fault here either. And there's value in being able to come to the conversation and say, you know what? In this conflict, I am sorry. I see how I have added to this issue. And to apologize, to lead and recognize, I understand how my faults, my sin, and my selfishness have made things worse. Because otherwise, if you don't recognize that, somebody sins against you and you get upset, so you sin against them. And the fight goes back and forth as they fling mud at you and you fling mud at them. And it spirals. We've all experienced that at some point. But it doesn't have to be that way. One of the maxims that I live by, a close friend of mine told me many, many years ago, is this. You should write this down. You should memorize this. It takes two to fight, but only one to love. You know why this is so crucial? Because if you don't fight back, it starves that flame of conflict of the oxygen it needs to continue burning. That person could be so mad at you, and they could be so irate, and they want to fight. But if you don't meet them in the fight, the conflict fizzles. One person doesn't have much fun fighting somebody who is choosing not to fight back. A boxer in the ring without an opponent, it's not much of a fight. And so remember that. It takes two to fight. So all you have to do if you want to prevent conflict or minimize and de-escalate conflict is just step out of the fight and say, "I'm not going to get into this with you. Yes, you've thrown mud on me, but I'm not going to throw it back on you." Secondly, it only takes one to love. That's the key point. Not only am I asking you to choose not to continue the cycle of the fight, to allow your sinfulness and selfishness to continue the fight, but to instead douse that conflict with the water of love. Okay? In 1 Peter chapter 4, verse 8, he writes this incredible verse, "Most important of all, Pay attention. Most important of all, continue to show deep love for each other, for love covers a multitude of sins. Remember that. Love covers a multitude of sins. It is easier to overlook the offense of your spouse whom you dearly love, or your parent or your child, when you deeply love them, and to just say, you know what, I love you, it's okay, I forgive you, let's move on. The coworker who gets under your skin all the time, that's a different story, isn't it? When you don't feel the love inside your heart for that person, and they continue to wrong you time and time again, it's harder to overlook that offense. It's easier to keep the record of wrongs and be like, they did it again. They always do it. They never do it. Those are words, if you're in an argument with somebody, free advice, pro tip. Don't ever use always or never, okay? It's never going to make the situation better. If you live a lifestyle overflowing with love, then you won't allow other people's mess and sin-throwing selfishness to bait you into a war. Instead, you'll meet them with love, with compassion, forgiveness, and maybe even a little understanding. I understand you had a bad day. I understand why right now you're not in the mood to tell me how great my cleaning is. I'm sorry you had a bad day, Michelle. Right? A little bit of love, a little bit of grace goes a really long ways. It prevents the conflict from all of a sudden ruining the entire night. And the best part about this secret is it only depends on you, because it only takes one to love. The other person might not be ready to love you back, but that doesn't mean that you can't stop the entire escalation and just choose to love and make a huge difference in how that situation is going to play out. So let's replay that hypothetical situation. If instead of choosing selfishness and sinfulness, I had chosen love, how would it have maybe looked different? Perhaps I'd have gotten up, and as I was doing the chores and cleaning up the clothes from the floor, I would have been thinking, you know what? I'm grateful that I'm able to work from home on a Friday so that on Saturday, we're not doing chores and we get to spend the day together doing something fun. And I'm not counting all the times that I do all the laundry and put all of her clothes away for her, because I don't keep a record of wrong. 1 Corinthians 13 says, love does not keep a record of wrong. I tell people this all the time because so many of us keep that in our minds. And then we wonder, we're like always upset with people. Stop keeping score. It's not helpful. And I find that I'm satisfied. I need to be satisfied in just loving her in a way that meets her needs by serving her. Even if she can't express the appreciation the way that I want and the moment I want, it's still an act of love. Sometimes you buy a gift for somebody and they're not super ecstatic about it. It's okay. You still love them by buying that gift. Or maybe you use your words of affirmation to encourage somebody and they just shrug it off because they don't know how to accept it. It's okay. Don't get mad when you try to love somebody and they don't respond exactly how you hope that they will. And what if it had happened that when she came home late and said, you cooked the wrong meal, I'd have said, I'm sorry. You want to have a seat? Let's have dinner together. And just stepped over it and ignored it. We could have, in that night, had a totally different evening together. Right? It's these small choices that I could make throughout the day that make a huge difference in how the relationship plays out. And you guys understand these things. Whether you're, you know, I'm using a lot of marriage examples, but even for those who aren't married or living with a spouse right now, you've got children, you've got friends, you've got parents, you've got all these relationships around you. And some of them are just constantly in a state of rub. They're just hard, and you wonder why they're always such a challenge. It's probably because there's a little bit of your sinfulness and a little bit of their sinfulness that's making those gears not quite go together. And the one thing you can do is choose not to fight, and instead choose to love. So the next time that you find yourself with a fight brewing, take a breath and try to search for the source of that fight. Whose need or want is not being met? Is this on me? Is this on them? What's the sin or the selfishness that's probably at the root here? Is there a fear? Is there an expectation that's not met? Is there an insecurity or a jealousy that I'm feeling or seeing in this person? Is there just stress over something completely unrelated to me and what I did that's just kind of the mud that's being thrown at me? Because when you understand the source of it, it's easier to show grace. It's a lot easier to just recognize, you know what? I didn't even do anything wrong. I'm sorry. You're just in a bad place. I'm going to love you anyway. Makes a huge difference when you find the source. And so what you do when you recognize that some of that source is your sinfulness, apologize. Last week we talked about forgiveness, but sometimes you just need to apologize. You need to say, I am sorry. Please forgive me. I overstepped. I blew this up out of proportion. You're right. I failed to do what I said I was going to do. I'm sorry. Please forgive me. Sometimes that is such a de-escalating event that just, it brings love and like, I see it clearly now and all of a sudden you're able to move forward. Those are the steps that prevent conflict. And maybe you see it and it is sinfulness on their part. Maybe they did something big or did something small. If you're able to overlook it, to step through it, to accept that mud being thrown on you and say, you know what, I'm just going to eat that. Jesus took all my sin on him, and he doesn't punish me for it. If he can do that for me, I can do that for this person, right? Essentially, this is shorthand for forgiveness. When the mud gets flung on me and I don't retaliate, what I'm doing is I'm canceling that debt. I'm forgiving. And the better we can get at quickly forgetting or quickly forgiving and moving past, the stronger our relationships are going to be. Though there's other times where choosing to love isn't as simple as just overlooking the offense. Sometimes there needs to be response. There needs to be perhaps confrontation, or there needs to be talking to them about, hey, you've got to change this behavior, or maybe there needs to be bigger consequences. But that's a topic for next week, okay? We don't have time to keep going. Next week, we're going to unpack what to do when the conflict needs to be addressed. And I encourage you to come back next week to hear that. We live in a world right now that when you turn on the TV, or you read the news, or you scroll through social media, conflict and power struggles are absolutely everywhere. It feels inescapable, and honestly, it sells. That's why they keep putting it on TV. Maybe it's because it makes people feel better that everybody else has as much conflict as we have in our own lives. But here's what I know. That is not the life that God has called us to. God says, blessed are the peacemakers. And it's not what I want to be known for. I want to be remembered as a peacemaker, as someone known for love that I showed, not the battles that I waged. And here's what I hope you focus on today as you leave. When you're genuinely full of God's love, this should not feel like a burden to overlook others' offenses. Instead, you will find yourself naturally less interested in winning battles and instead more interested in extending grace and forgiveness to others. People who are filled with love will not be filled with conflict. The two are just incompatible because you're not choosing to fight, you're instead choosing to love. You want to prevent conflict? Fill yourself up with love. James said it perfectly in the verse right before our passage. It's actually the final verse of chapter 3. He wrote, and those who are peacemakers will plant seeds of peace and reap a harvest of righteousness. That's our goal. So this week, when conflict comes, search for the source, recognize the sin, especially if it's your own, and choose love. That's how you prevent conflict before it starts and become the peacemaker God created each one of us to be. Would you bow your heads with me as I pray?